Because everyone knows it's four pages to the...
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
That's four.
The top four.
Donuts are vegan.
Yes, they are.
You know, like you say, they can't believe it's not butter. Can't believe it's, it's not Dunkin' Donuts.
Good?
So I then sleep boxes
They're very good.
Okay, so we're going to discuss today the laws, the halachot of traveling on Hanukkah, because obviously there's an obligation for on every Jew to light Hanukkah licht, and it's not always so easy. Rachel mentioned that she was on a train, and she was wondering what to do on a train. There's actually a number of tshuvas. The Or HaShulchan has a tshuva on this. The other Achorim have a tshuva. There's the more recent ones. That there's a posek in Muncie who wrote a sefer on halacha, on questions he was asked. So one of the questions he was asked, what if we are on a plane and the time comes to light Chanukah licht? So he actually writes there that you should go into the bathroom and light Chanukah licht in the bathroom. So like that would really go over well today.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
This is before 9/11, but still. And the Aruch HaShulchan actually says the same thing. He says, if you're on a train, you know, there was no planes in his time, but he says, on a train, you should light it on the train. So we'll see that it's not so simple. Yeah. But just so you know that there's a lot of different opinions, wide-ranging opinions on this matter, and it's not a simple matter. So the first source we're going to see is the source of Chanukah, the mitzvah of Chanukah. So the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, anyone want to read that? The first source on the first page? Number one. Right, brighter.
Right. The basic mitzvah of Hanukkah to each day to have a light kindled by a person at the head of the household for the stout and his house.
So this is a famous Gemara. Says Ner Ishibeso. Ner Ishibeso is like the line that people use whenever they describe Hanukkah. That means nearest space means that one candle suffices to fulfill the mitzvah for the entire household. But so that's according to the halacha. Interesting to note that the Gemara goes on to say in the Hebrew that mahadrin near echad lochol echad ve'echad, that someone does an extra special way, does it in a better way. Every person has his own candle. And then it goes on to say the mahadrin min mahadrin, the best of the best possible way you could do it. According to Beis Shammai, the first day you light 8, and then you go 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then Basil Omim Yom Rishon Nal Lechachem Mikam Ve'elach Mosif Ve'holach. Like we do it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But we're doing it. We're not just doing a mitzvah. We're doing the Mahajim Min Mahajim, the best of the best. So if you look, if you notice that term Mahajim Min Mahajim, it's very interesting. It's usually used for kosher food. So when I was in Baltimore, so Rav Hyman was asked about a certain hechsher that was given on ice cream. So ice cream, Habish ice cream, not a Jewish company. And they asked them, it says, Mahajim and Mahajim, the best of the best. So that's what his opinion is. So he said, anyone who eats ice cream cannot be Mahajim and Mahajim. Mahajim and Mahajim means you're extra specially religious. And if you eat ice cream, that shows that you're not really... So he said that it's not compatible to the heksher. But the truth is that Mahajim, it's very strange the halacha that we actually do, the regular halacha that we do, is called Mahajim, is the best of the best. So it's nothing to do with this class, but I'll tell you a nice idea. That Mahajim has to do with, when Mahajim, people use it today, unfortunately, to mean religious, you know, more strict. But the truth is the word Hadar is used in the Torah, other places, by Esrog. And the halacha by Esrog is, it says, pre Eitz Hadar, you need a beautiful fruit. It's not a religious fruit, not a strict fruit, but a beautiful fruit. So Hadar really means beautiful. That's why Esrog is not supposed to have spots, not supposed to have blemishes, not supposed to be chaser, not supposed to be missing something. So the Hajim and Hajim really means the most beautiful of all. And that relates a lot to Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a holiday of beauty. And another way we know this is because we always read these parshas, time of Yosef. And Yosef, the parshas during Hanukkah is about Yosef, the story of Yosef. Yosef is described, like his mother, Rachel, as someone who is beautiful. Befei Torah, befei Mara. So this is not a coincidence. All these things connect to one another, but the idea is that we, unfortunately, in our day and age, we treat beauty as if it's something beautiful, something very strict and religious. And that's really not compatible. Not really supposed to be with one another, together with one idea of one another. But in terms of Hanukkah halacha, so this tells you an interesting thing. Ner ish beisav. Ner ish means every person in the household is yosei with one candle. Ish beisav for his whole household. But technically, the words mean ner ish means it's an obligation on a person. Ubeso and his household. In his house. What does that mean? So it could be similar to mezuzah. Could be, if you're on a train, you can't fulfill the mitzvah of lighting candles. Because on a train, you don't have a house. It's like mezuzah. Mezuzah, if you don't walk down the street, you carry a mezuzah around your neck. Don't even have a house, put a mezuzah. So it could be the same halacha by Neres Chanukah. If you don't have a house, then you don't have to light Chanukah candles. So we'll see if that's true. If you look at the second source, see about a guest, Achsanya. The Ran says in the Rif on Sechah Shabbos of Chaf Beis, which is the sugya of Chanukah candles, which is found in the parak, the chapter called Babem Adlikin. Babem Adlikin is about Shabbos candles. We'll see there's a connection between Shabbos candles and Chanukah candles. But that's where they discuss the mitzvah of Chanukah candles in the Gemara. So I want to read number two.
Even though a guest does not have a home, he is still obligated in lighting Hanukkah candles. We don't say the halakha of Hanukkah candles is like a mezuzah, where you're exempt from the mitzvah if you don't have a home.
So we see that the Ron is making a distinction between mezuzah and Hanukkah candles. The Hanukkah candles, you're obligated even if you're a guest. But if you go to someone's house, there's no obligation on you to put a mezuzah up. It's only the owner of the house has to put a mezuzah. Same thing would be for Micah. Micah is, if you have roof guard rails, you know, the roof. The Torah says you have to put rails up so people don't fall off the roof. That's an obligation on the owner of the house to do that. But not on, if I'm visiting a house, doesn't have a Micah, I don't violate anything. If I visit a house, doesn't have a mezuzah, I don't violate anything. That's not my obligation. So it's an obligation on the person that owns the house. And he says it's not true by Hanukkah candles. So you see there's a difference. Chanukah candles, if you go to a guest in someone's house, the Gemara says you're obligated to light Chanukah candles, because that means that shows on you. And basically what the idea is, with the way they say it in the Lomdish terms, in the Talmudic terms, is that it's Chovas Gavra or Chovas Bias. It's an obligation on the person, or an obligation on the house, like we said. So the extreme case obligation on a person is a Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, who lived in Israel. In the last generation, he died, I think, maybe 15 years ago, I think, I'm not sure. But he died pretty recently. So he's a famous posek in Israel. He said that he was asked a question, what, someone's in the army. Do they have to light Hanukkah candles while they're on the field? He said, yes. Wherever you are, you have to light Hanukkah, you have an obligation to light Hanukkah candles. So if you don't have a house, you don't have to be able to get a house, you still got light, you have an obligation on you. So that's an extreme example of someone who holds obligations on you, not on the house. Rav Yashiv, also great posek from the last generation, probably died in the 90s, I think, maybe the 2000s, not so long ago. So he was asked a question. Let's say you're traveling, and you plan to stay not in a hotel. Let's say you're in an airport, but you sleep in the airport. So Tzitz Eliezer would say you have to light candles. Rabbi Yoshua says that you don't have, like, you shouldn't light candles in the airport because it's not a house. But he says you have an obligation to rent a real hotel room so you can get a house. Mm-hmm. So you can light Hanukkah candles because you can't do that at a house, but you need to do that. Mm. So it's even more than that. If you look at, let me see the sources here.
So Rabbi, if a person had a little battery LED menorah, so it doesn't have to plug in and there's no fire, could he fulfill the mitzvah by lighting that in the airport?
So that's a good question. The question is a very famous question in Posu. Do you need to have an actual fire? Can you light electricity? There's a different opinion about that. There's a difference of opinion about Shabbos also. Is that called lighting a fire, electricity? It's not a simple question. Most poskim say you can't light the Hanukkah candles with it because that's similar to the way they lit it in the Beis HaMikdash. Most poskim would say that it is like electricity on Shabbos, like fire on Shabbos though. I spoke to a rabbi today actually, the new assistant rabbi at Mikveh Israel. We had a meeting today just to get acquainted. Very wonderful guy. He mentioned to me, we're talking about the restaurants, kosher restaurants. He was very happy about that because he thought there were no kosher restaurants in San Francisco. I said, little did you know there's 30. So he's very happy. And when I spoke to him about Bishul Akum's cooking of non-Jew cooking food, with that issue. So he actually told me, he quoted a Sephardi posek that holds that that electricity is not fire, it's not cooking. Even if you cook an electric stove, because it's not cold cooking Bishul Akum, which is a very interesting opinion. But you see that there's a different opinion about electric menorah. But some say you are Yotzi with electric, so that could be an Eitzah. It could be an idea that you light electric menorah. Maybe people say if you're in a hospital, they won't let you light candles, but you can light an electric menorah. I mean, you probably should do that because that fulfill the obligation of the post to say you have to light. But I don't have the source here, but the Gemara says, and the Shulchan Aruch passes this way that you have to sell your entire, all the money you have, shirt off your back. Sell the shirt off your back, it says, even if you know all the money, to buy Hanukkah candles. Mm-hmm. So Rav Yashiv, according to Rav Yashiv, not only that, you would have to buy, spend, if your only hotel available is the Plaza Hotel, the Waldorf Astoria, you have to spend $2,000 in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Hanukkah candles. Mm-hmm. So that's the extreme example of obligation on you. And the other extreme is that, like I said, if you don't have a house, then you don't have to fulfill the mitzvah at all. I don't know if anyone holds that. I don't think anyone holds that. But you see, there's a combination of both. And that's what we see from the Pnei Yeshua, Daf Chafal from a Beis in Masechta Shabbos. So I want to read that in English, Pnei Yeshua on Shabbat 21b4.
It would seem that this mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles is different from other mitzvot that are an obligation on each individual to perform it. I.e., it is better for you to do it than your representative. Hanukkah lighting is different because the purpose of the mitzvah is publicizing the miracle.
So see what that means, publicizing the miracle. That's a big theme in Hanukkah candles, is publicizing the miracle. We see from here, from the Pnei Yeshua, the mitzvah of Hanukkah candles is different, he says, because it's unusual to perform the mitzvah, but it's in a house. So basically, it's like a combination of, it's like a hybrid. There's an obligation on you, but you need to do it in the house, and that means that this would be opposed to the Tzitz Eliezer, who says that you can light it anywhere you want. And that's, by the way, a problem if the public lightings they do in the square. So I was actually thinking that on the way over here, I saw some of these nice Chabad boys who were stopping people on the street, asking if they want a donut or if they want to light Hanukkah candles. So they obviously are going like the Tzitz Eliezer. They're saying you can light it in the middle of the street, but it's really questionable whether you can do that, especially the ones. It's just harabim, the ones, you know, like they light in Minhas Square. It's really questionable whether they can make a bracha on that. No, I can't light it, whether they can make a bracha on it. So some people do. But really, it would seem that that's only according to Eliezer. Everyone else would hold, you need actual house to a home, your home, to do it, especially in Chutz L'Aretz. In the Ramah holds, we'll see, the Ramah holds that in Chutz L'Aretz, outside of the land of Israel, the main lighting is inside the house. This is something a lot of people ask me this question. You play by window. The Gemara says it has to be only when people are outside. According to this, in America, you wouldn't have to worry about that as long as there's people inside. And we'll see that plays a part too when you're traveling. Mm. But for outside, you don't have to worry about it. So really, the truth is that you don't have to light by window. It's better to light by window because then you, all the people see from the outside, but the main lighting is for inside the house. Whereas in Israel, it's the opposite. Israel, the main mitzvah, it was like the Gemara, which basically says that you got only light when people are outside because that's where the main lighting is. They actually light it outside. They have these Chanukah menorah boxes, glass boxes. They light it in the box, and if there's windy outside, it's very complicated to light those candles. They always go out, but the fact is that this box is it's almost airtight. It can't be airtight because the candles will go out, but it's almost airtight so that there's enough oxygen for the candles to burn, but not strong enough of a gust that a gust of wind will blow it out. So basically, they light in these boxes outside. Does Aaron do that? You know?
You gotta ask him.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I was in Israel.
Yeah, so in Israel, because the main light is for outside, because in Chutz Laaretz, the problem was that the non-Jews would see who the Jews' houses were if they had it was visible outside. So they would burn the house down. They would literally take the candles and burn the house down.
Right.
And they would attack Jews for being Jewish. And so they changed the main aspect of the lighting for the inside of the house. So that's even though we don't have that situation, thank God, in America now, but since it was changed, the Ramah says basically that nowadays that's the main issue. And we'll see that it makes a big difference because, for instance, if you go away, someone asked me today, Shaila, they said they're going away to Denver. So they're leaving 2:30 in the afternoon and landing in Denver at 8 o'clock at night. So what do you do? So we'll see. Basically, what I told them was you have to light when you get to the hotel room because your hotel room is you renting the hotel room. That's your house. Mm-hmm. And it's for the inside, that's for the outside. So you light for yourself in the room. And then when you get home, he says leaving in the afternoon on the way back and getting him back at night. So the same thing. When you get home, you light the candles. And they're supposed to light as early as possible, but the earliest possible you could do it when you have a house is when you get back. So we see that basically you need your, it's on the, obligation seems to be on the person, but they need to do it in their own house.
So what does that mean for guests? Like,
right, so we'll get to guests.
You get to guests.
Yeah. So basically guests is a special category.
Mm-hmm.
The Gemara says Achsanya is someone who doesn't have their own house, and someone else's house. So they have it's a different category. And if you think about it, it needs to be a different category. That's the question you're asking, because basically what you're saying is they don't have a house. So that's why the Gemara has to say you are obligated. We would think you're not obligated, because you don't have a house. You're a guest. It's someone else's house, not your house. So the Gemara actually has to go out of his way to say Achsanya, a guest, is obligated in lighting candles.
So this opinion that you could light in the bathroom of the plane,
yeah.
So obviously it's not being publicized.
So it's a good question. Basically, what you're doing is you're saying.
And also, how you say the bracha in the bathroom?
So he said he actually writes you should say the bracha outside the bathroom, and then you light it in the bathroom. Crazy. Yeah, so it's a good point. But he wrote the tshuva before 9/11. To be fair, I mean, not that anyone.
Yeah.
So what he said to do is you light it and then you put it out. So he felt it was safe enough that you could bend the rules a little bit. I mean, basically the rules are only there if it's dangerous. So he felt like lighting a candle and putting it out. Well, in seconds, it's not dangerous. So he felt.
Okay, so he didn't have to let it go all the way.
Right, he says you should light it, and then you put it right out. So. Okay, so now we'll see that there's another category also. We explained, just we said about the guests, but there's also another category, someone who doesn't have a house. There's actually a halacha for that. So if someone read the last one on the first page.
Whoever did light and isn't going to be lighting that night, and also the household did light on their behalf, when they see a Hanukkah candle, they should make a single blessing of Shas, Samisi, who made miracles. And if it's on the first night, they should also say the blessing of Shehapiyana. And if on the second or third night they can light themselves, they do not repeat the blessing.
So this is called Birchas Haroa, someone who sees a Hanukkah candle. This is someone who's not going to light candles the whole night, and they're not going to light. So basically, they have no home, no Hanukkah candles to light. So they can make a Birchas Haroa. They can make a bracha on seeing the candle. So they can't make the bracha of lahalik neshu Hanukkah because that means the bracha of lighting the candle of Hanukkah. You're not lighting it. They say the other bracha. This is Shas Nisim Lav Seinu. It's called Birchas Haroa. So we see that there's another category of someone who doesn't have a house. So according to, it's very hard to understand. Tzitzel Eliezer has to explain this. He explains why, but he says that he has to explain why it is that this person doesn't have a house. can't light himself. He has to only fulfill the two, the blessing of Shas Nisan and Shachiyon on the first night. So we see that there's the Gemara puts these people in the different categories because they don't have a home. Now this is the second page. The first source is the halacha about the guest. Someone read that, please. Anyone?
A guest for whom no one is kindling in his own house needs to give a gruta, i.e. a nominal sum, to the host to partner with him in the oil of the Hanukkah light. And if he has his own entrance, he needs to light in his entrance, even though that residence is only designated for sleeping, and he eats at the host's table. And there are those that say that nowadays when we kindle actually inside, one should kindle at the place where one eats, and so people have made it a custom.
Okay, so what we see from here is that there's a separate halacha of a guest, achsanai. And we say it's very interesting. You have two ways to fill the mitzvah. You could light it yourself if you have your own entrance, your own area. The other possibility is mishtatef imo b'priti. Tzorech les l'priti. You have to give him a pruta, a nominal sum like quarter, to the host to partner with him to all the Hanukkah light. Now this is interesting. So basically, you could give someone money and fulfill your obligation. As a matter of fact, it seems from Shulchan that you don't have to do it yourself. You're a guest someone's house, you just give someone money, and you fulfill his through his mitzvah. Now, that's very strange. You're not lighting the candle. Your obligation is on you, so you're not lighting the candles, but you're fulfilling obligation by paying someone a buck, you know, paying someone off, hey, do a mitzvah for me. Can I pay someone, put a tefillin for me? You say, here's a dollar, put a tefillin on. Can I say, make a bracha on the apple for me? Here's a dollar. I mean, how's that work? What are you gonna say?
Would it be similar? I mean, I know it's in this case it's a guest, but would it be similar to, let's say, like a married couple, right? One of them probably bought the candles or oil by themselves, but in theory, the other one also contributes.
So that's another question. Why is it okay if I'm in Japan and my wife is lighting for me at home? We saw this in the last couple of hours. That works. I mean. What's the connection? I mean, can I have a kiddush at home for my wife who's in Japan? I mean, it doesn't work. So how's Gemara says that if your wife is lying from home, family is lying from home, that works. You'll see the mitzvah. I mean, you're not doing the mitzvah. So how can someone else do it for you? You can't do it. Either shliach. So the Ron actually asks this question. He says that this is an interesting thing. He says that that there's different verbiage in the bracha. So one of them is al, like al nitilat yadayim. Or al mitzvah lulav. Then there's olahalik le. So he says his general difference is that al is not when you're not performing the mitzvah. Someone else performing the mitzvah could perform the mitzvah. Shliach kuba is shliach. So he explains the exceptions to the rule. But if you say le to do it, so then you're doing it. So he says if that's the case, how can your wife lie for you if you say lahad? It's lahadik. Lahadik means you're doing it. So he writes a very interesting answer. I think he's skipping a little bit, but he says it with Ron. Ron and Riff. This is the last source. Very interesting, Ron. Sachem Dav Zayin. Ron and the Riff. So if someone read that, it's very interesting. Halachi, he says, he explains why it's Leh Ha'Lechner.
However, one can ask on this rule, a mitzvah which can be done via messenger that have the blessing of al, and those that one must do themselves that have the blessing of leh. With the case of the Hanukkah candles, which can be done via messenger, yet we say a blessing of leh. We can answer that since the Talmud says that one can fulfill their obligation via money when it is done via messenger, he's still doing it himself with his money. So this mitzvah really can't be accomplished through someone.
So it's amazing. So basically what he's saying is that if your wife does it for you, it's not because she's doing it for you, not a messenger. She's lighting, you own what she's lighting too. You're part owner in that candle. So your money is publicized in ace. So that's what you need. You need to actually do that. You need that. Your money should publicize in ace. This is something that very interesting. My Rosh Shiva, Rav Sarodinsky, he passed it. He changed his mind about this. But I think it's very, very intelligent approach. So if someone's going to Israel, very interesting question. Someone's going to Israel. They're leaving at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The flight means they can meet at the airport before candlelighting is obligated. Not home when the obligation falls on you. You go to Israel, and they end in Israel the next morning. So you're on the flight the whole time it's night. So what do you do? You're stuck. You got to lie in the bathroom. You know, there's nothing to do. You're going to miss that whole night of Hanukkah. There's nothing to do. If you go to Japan, you go to Asia, you just miss the whole. So what do you do? So the Chazanis actually writes that you shouldn't travel. Not allowed to travel. You see, it's not the Rav Yosher said the name of Chazanis. You can't travel. You shouldn't travel to Hanukkah. It's interesting because the Chazanis also asked a question about in an article. If you have no sunlight or no night, 24 hours or you know whatever it is. You don't have when you daven. You don't have times. There's no when Shabbos start. When Shabbos end. So his answer was, you shouldn't live in these places. But what if you know, that's the same question asked by, unfortunately, the Israeli astronaut that died in the explosion. So they asked the same question. He said, what do you do about Shabbos? What do you do? You know, you're in space. There's no time. So it's an interesting question. But so what do you do? So my Rosh Yeshiva had a genius idea. He basically said that because there's Ron, you could have somebody light candles for you in your house because your money is fulfills the miracle. So that's the idea, that your money is fulfilling the miracle. So his problem with that was not that issue. His problem was he changed his mind because he said that that's only for if there's people in your house, because then this presumably is publicizing the miracle in the house. But since he says it's not for, now there's an America, it's not for outside. So if there's no one at home and someone, your friend's lighting for you and they're not living there, so there's no publicizing, no presumably, no publicizing the miracle. So, but I think there's a way, you could argue that it's not only for inside the house, also outside the house. So as long as there's people outside that could technically see your Hanukkah candles. So we say that I think it's some kind of line, because really nothing, not much you could do. There's no other way to fill the mitzvah. So I think it's a smart way to do it. I think if someone's traveling to Israel, just ask someone else to light candles for you and make sure it's near a window people can see from outside. So that way, your money fulfills this mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles. And that's we learn this from Achsania. Achsania means you can give someone a dollar, not because your money, you're paying someone off to the mitzvah for you, because your money is doing the public size of miracle. That's the point. That's why I'm saying this. That's the logic of Achsania, of a guest. That you don't have to light yourself. You can light, not because he's your messenger, he's doing it for you. It's because your money is actually participating. In that situation, you have to realize, though, that there's no such thing as lighting for the whole family. That the father can't light for the whole family. Every single child who's obligated in Hanukkah has to give a quarter to towards this. So if you have 10 kids, you got to give, you know, $5 to the household to make sure your money is playing a part in the Hanukkah candles. And it could be a problem, because some say it's an issue because if it's cost less than $5, then you're paying more. Your share is more than the whole thing's worth. So you got an issue. So, but the point is that when you're a guest in someone's home, the reason it works is because your money is playing a part in publicizing this miracle, and that's really what's necessary over here.
But for the family at home, one person could do it on behalf.
Right. So the reason for that is because the family, marriage to basically means you're doing it for the household. So we see that one candle is enough for the whole household.
Yeah.
So basically, the whole household is combined together, which is a beautiful thing about Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a family holiday. It really is. It's literally the mitzvah for the family. If everyone lives there, everyone has a part, is part of the household. Then if the husband's in Japan, then the wife could life in his place, not because of the money, but because it's his family. So his family is home. So that means that the publicizing of the miracle, presuming Nisa, actually happens in his home and in the people's home. So if his money does that, it's because his family benefits from it. But if some random stranger comes in your house, it's not good enough. It's not called publicizing the miracle, because you have to actually live there to publicize the miracle inside that house. Yeah.
Does that only apply to family who live with you?
So family. That's a good
question.
Yes, it's a good question.
There, but they don't live with you.
So there's a good question. This question comes up with boys in yeshiva. Someone's in yeshiva, so they live in yeshiva. So when they come home, they don't live at home anymore. So they come home like once every 6 weeks on the weekend. The question is, so the answer is that if you really don't live there at all, so you're an achsan, you're a guest. So you have to fulfill the mitzvah of a guest, so you have to pay money. But if you live there once every 6 weeks, and that's where you grew up, let's say, so I mean that's your home. So then you can consider it your home. But another famous question was asked about this, that if someone goes to their, now you bring it up, you look at page 2. Page two, the second source. So I want to read this. This is a question answer of Vadya Yosef, and he quotes Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. He argues, he loves quoting Ashkenazi poskim and then arguing with them. So he argues with Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and I think there's a Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky actually makes more sense in my opinion than Vadya Yosef. We're not trying to take sides over here, but this is Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's shugo about this question. Very interesting question. You want to read number that second source on the second page?
Where should a married person who is visiting his parents for Shabbat light candles on Motzei Shabbat? Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichron Alevracha, in his book, Emet Yaakov, writes, someone visiting someone else's house on Shabbat Hanukkah and is planning to return home on Motzei Shabbat should light in the place he is visiting because it is considered his home until he leaves.
So it's a very interesting question. So if you're there for Friday night and then you're leaving Saturday night, so some postings say, and Rabbi Yosef says this, you have to light in your house because the mitzvah is on you and your house. You're not in your house now and you're not sleeping there that night. But the Rabbi Yosef says, I think something very logical. Since this is your place of residence, you slept there one night. If you're going to a party, that's a big, big difference. You go to a party, you can't light candles there. People make a mistake. They think you light candles at a party. And we'll see why we were able to make a bracha and shul. But if you go to someone's party and you're just there for a couple hours, let's say you leave your house at 4 o'clock to this amazing Hanukkah party, and it lasts hours long, and you're drinking, and it's great, it's fantastic, and you say, well, let's light Hanukkah candles, you can't light Hanukkah candles because it's not your house, you live there. What kind of living there? You sleep there, you spend the night, so then that's your home for the night.
It's a really good party.
Yeah, right.
Right. It's such a good party that you sleep there. But the problem is that after you wake up, it's going to be the morning, and you're not going to light anymore. So you have to plan to do that in advance. You can't just have the great party and then conk out and then wake up and say, okay, I got to light candles. It doesn't work that way. But basically, since you're there for Friday night, you live there. You're living there. So you're there Saturday night. You're still living there. You didn't leave yet. So even though you're not sleeping there Saturday night, so Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says that you're able to fulfill the mitzvah at that place and as an aksanya, which means you don't have to light candles. You can just give him a buck, give him a dollar, and fulfill the mitzvah that way. So that really gives a framework to this whole concept of traveling, I think. Now, I'll show you the Taz. The Taz, the last, the one after that one about the question and answer. Yaakov Kamenetsky. The one, someone read the last one. This is a party case to the Taz and Shulchan Aruch. Anyone?
I can read it.
Thanks.
It would seem that the Ramah, who says you light where you eat, is talking about a situation where you sleep there too, i.e. you are staying there permanently, as opposed to when you go out to eat once. In that case, you must go home to light. The case of a guest where you can light there because you are sleeping there, if you light in a place you eat at for an hour or two, it's as if you lit in the street. They think they are relying on the Ramah, and this is a big mistake because we don't understand this.
So basically, the Ramah says, he asks a question, if you sleep in one place and you eat in another place, where do you light? So this is a famous question in yeshiva. So the yeshiva boys, do they eat light in the rooms, or do they light in the lunchroom? So the answer is they light in the lunchroom, because Ramah says that you light where you eat, not where you sleep. The reason for that is because eating is, he considers to be more of a permanence than sleeping. Interesting. So people deduce from that, that basically if you go to a party, since you're eating there, you can light candles. So the Rebbe Taz says, no, you don't get it. He's saying if you sleep there, that means that you're staying there. Once you're sleeping there, then you light where you eat, which means that's not either or. It's because you're sleeping there, that means you're permanent, so that means you light where you eat, because that's where you get your sustenance while you're staying there. This is where everyone meets. This is a lunch, public lunchroom. Everyone meets there, and therefore it's a more public space, and more presumptuous, more publicized in the miracle. And if you're in a permanent spot. So someone was asked, asked Rosh Hashiva. He's a guy who lived in the upper west side, and he used to eat at a different restaurant every night. That's what during the year. Every night he's in a different restaurant. So he's trying to figure out which restaurant do I light in, because that's where I eat. So Rosh Hashiva says, you don't get it. You're only eating, you're not sleeping there. So you don't light in a restaurant because you eat there. People misread this Ramah. So basically the point is that if you don't sleep there, it's not permanent. So you can't light there. Once you sleep in there, then we figure out where you light. It's better to light where you eat.
What about college campuses where like the dining hall might be a separate thing from the dormitory?
So that's a good question. So the reason why yeshiva is different is because yeshiva, everybody eats in the dining room, in the same dining room, and even though it's separate, but it's like a place where people gather together. But in a college campus, since there's a lot of non-Jews there, and generally speaking, and even if it's in a hill, but people don't. It's not like a permanent. It could be if it's a dining hall, Jewish dining hall, where everyone eats, and that it might be better, similar to yeshiva, where you eat. But otherwise, you should light in your room where you sleep. I mean, it's not like you can't light your room where you sleep. It's just better. He says better, but you can light. Whereas you can't light, you can eat where you sleep. You could light where you sleep. Okay, and then
Jacob.
Yes.
With regard to the question of a married person going to visit their parents and lighting there because that's where they're living.
Yes.
If you, like, let's say you have like a couple, right? One of them goes to the parents for the weekend, one of them stays home. So if that person is lighting by their parents, does their spouse have to also light at home, or is their application fulfilled by the other person lighting at the parents' house, even though the spouse at home isn't living at the parents' house that weekend?
So it's an interesting question. So the answer is that lighting in your home must be, we said it before, you have to light it. You have to light the candles. You can't pay money for a home, right? So if you're, and a sign is a different, so you guess a different halacha, you're a different halacha, you're in different categories. So you're a person who, you're allowed to pay for it because that's way for the mitzvah. So basically the wife has her own obligation to light at home, and the husband has a separate obligation to light where he is. So basically they both have to light. Because it could be that the husband can be fulfill his obligation for the wife's lighting because since it's his household, and it's his money, so that could work, but the man definitely can't light for his wife because he's, even if he lights candles, he's a different halacha. He's not lighting in his house. He's lighting as a guest. So guests is a separate halacha. So it's not, he can't fulfill the mitzvah of his wife who has a house, who's at home. So the home obligation can't be fulfilled by an achsanya, a guest, but the home obligation can fulfill the mitzvah of someone who is a guest.
Could the answer just be don't visit your parents on Hanukkah?
No, I think it's actually good. It's the halacha is made for someone in a situation like that. When you do visit, it's a good thing to do.
You're still
going to
tell us why it's okay.
Yeah. So if you look, let me see. So another thing is that just one last point before the short one. You see the timing. So just to back up this point we just made. So we'll read the third page, the first source. Mishnah Berurah. Third page.
When one's wife lights Hanukkah candles in his house, he fulfills his obligation with her lighting, even if he is far away from home, and it's unnecessary for him light or participate in another lighting with money.
So that's Allah we just said. Basically, someone's visiting in someone's house, they can light by giving them money, but they don't have to. They can fulfill the obligation with the wife at home because basically your money there is fulfilling the mitzvah of Pesumi Nisa, and the family is benefiting from that Pesumi Nisa. So want to read the next one, Shulchan Aruch?
Hanukkah candles are not lit before sunset, but rather with the end of sunset, neither later nor before. And there are those who say that if one is busy, it is permissible to light from Plaga Mincha and onward, as long one puts enough oil so that the lamp remains lit until people stop passing through the marketplace.
So basically what this halacha is saying is that, telling you that, if let's say you go to a party, and you want a light, or you're going on traveling, and you want a light early. So you technically you can light from Plaga Mincha, which is like nowadays around 3:30, 3:40.
Like dusk.
Like way before dusk. Yeah, Plaga Mincha is the time, is still light outside. So you can light, but it has to light until the obligation is, which is basically it has to be lit when it's dark outside.
Okay.
Because Mordechai, for example, says that if you don't have darkness, then you can't. Candles only seen in the dark. That's not seen in the light. Yeah. It's not the time for lighting. But you can light from Plaga Mincha, which is late afternoon, before it gets dark, as long as it lights through the night. So the problem is that it has to light for a half an hour at night. So the problem with that is that if you're traveling, and you can't, you have to leave at 4 o'clock. So the question is, can you light at 3:45 after Pagam Mincha, and let it light till the nighttime, and then and you're not there for you're traveling. You need to catch a flight, so you can't stay while it's still dark. But it's lit while it's still dark. So it depends on this question whether we say that you fulfill the obligation of Pirsum Nisa outside your house when you're not there. So if you need to be there home, you need to be home at least for it would seem 30 minutes or at least a little time during when it's dark outside, so that the publicized miracle occurs in the house. But if you hold that it can be outside, so then you could light it, just like your friend could light it for you when you're away, so you can light it early, and let it light as long as it stays lit through the night, through a few minutes in the night, so then people from outside could see it, so then you fulfill the obligation that way. So the question is, let's say you go into a party. That's really another question. Now you go into a party, and you need to leave at exactly when the nighttime obligation occurs. So the best thing to do is you could light the candle, and you don't want the candles to be lit. So let's say nightfall is 4:45, and you gotta leave on the dot 4:45. So you could light at 4:45 when it turns dark, or let's say 5:00 when it turns dark, even for a minute, and then put it out if you need to. And then leave, because as long as there's a half an hour of oil in the candle, so you lit during the time of your obligation, and is, you can put it out a minute later, because so I always tell people are afraid of leaving the Hanukkah menorah in the house because of fire. There's been a lot of fires that have unfortunately occurred in the situation where someone leaves the Hanukkah candles lit and then at home. So you can put it out immediately, as long as it's lit during night after nightfall. So let's say nowadays it's 5:30. So I think you really got to wait till 5:30, and then you can put it out, as long as there's enough oil for half an hour. So that's an idea. If someone needs to go to a party, and they're going to leave right around the time of nightfall, so they should light the candle as long as it's dark outside and remain by the candle as long as they can, and then they can leave, they can put the fire out when they're leaving and go. But that's the best thing to do, because there are many that hold that Hanukkah candles is a mitzvah veris. That means that the later you light, the worse it is, because you're lighting at the beginning of the night, says in the Shulchan Aruch, because basically you're lighting for Hanukkah. So if you wait before you light the Hanukkah candles, so you're missing out on the ability to fill mitzvah. It's like circumcision, bris milah. The eighth day comes, the mitzvah's on you. So the more you waste time, the it's a mitzvah veris. It's time that you're violating the mitzvah of not doing the mitzvah. So really, you should light as early as possible. But only time you should, like I said, the first case where someone is traveling, not going to get to the destination till later. So that since you can't do it till later, so you should do it later. But if you're leaving early, let's say it flies at 6:00, and you're able to stay home until 5:00 or 5:30, you should light first before you leave. And then put it out, and then go to the airport. So that's really you should. That's what we see from this halacha. And we see the next source is halacha also mitzvah. The kindling accomplishes the commandment. Therefore, if one is extinguished before the minimum time has passed, he's not bound to rekindle it. The Rama says, if you want to be stringent, you could go back and kindle it, but you shouldn't say the bracha. So basically, the point is that you could put out the candle if you need to.
So sorry, I have a question.
Yeah.
Is it about like the place you're sleeping that night?
Because
it feels like if you're going on a flight, you should still do it because you're
going to
sleep somewhere else that's not your home.
So that's the distinction we made. We said if it's your own home, you own the home.
Okay.
So then you have to light in the home. So if you go to a hotel, you're renting the home. That means it's like you own it. A renter is like an owner in halacha. So if you rent a hotel room, that means you own that space, and therefore you light in. That's why I said the guy should light in his hotel room. But if you're a guest at someone's house with someone else lighting, then that's an achsanya. That's someone who has to give them money. He can light on his own too if he wants to, but he can fulfill the mitzvah just giving them money, and he's fulfilled the obligation through the other person.
Lighting later in a hotel room is still better than lighting earlier in your own.
Lighting before the time. If you light before the zman in your own home, then it's better to light in the hotel room. But if you're lighting after the zman, like even a minute after the zman, so it's better to light in your house. So again, same question. Is sleepy car and a train, is that called your house? Shulchan seems to say it is. But the question is that is train called a house? It could be, it's your hotel room. You could argue if you rent the space, or maybe it is your house. It's possible, yeah.
In times of war, when there are blackouts, and people had those blackout shades and or blackout paper, and you couldn't show light from your home. So could they maybe light Hanukkah candles in a way that no one could see them from the outside, because you know, you don't want the Germans to, you're in New York City and everything's blacked out.
So we explained the Ramah holds that if it's, you know, chutz la'aretz, you can fulfill the mitzvah. Not only can you fulfill the mitzvah obligation with the blackout shades, that's the main way to do it. The main way is the inside. That's why you can light late at night, because if someone, as long as someone's home, even if it's very late, people are sleep, not walking in the street, doesn't matter, because the mitzvah is inside the house. So as long as someone's home, they fulfill the mitzvah inside the house. But if it's you're in Israel, then you have a problem. You can't do it that way. You have to do it for outside.
But if it were a time of war in Israel, and there's some reason why they don't want the enemy to be able to see people's lights.
Yeah. So then that's true. Then you could be fulfilling it inside.
You mentioned someone needing to be at home. Does that person need to be able, like, could I light my candles and then go to sleep?
Technically, you can. Okay. You know. Technically, you can.
If I'm the only person in the room, even?
Because you fulfill the mitzvah right away.
Fire safety, you know.
you fill the mitzvah right away. You can't, if you slip, if you lit it in your sleep, that'll be a problem. But as long as you lit it and you're awake a little bit, then you fulfill the mitzvah in the house. So last halakha, the last page, explains in Shul. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Malikim Avarachim Beis HaKnesset Shushim Kudim Sunisa. So we light, benediction in the synagogue for the sake of publicizing the miracle. So the question is, why is this okay? No one lives in a shul. It's not a residence. So why is it okay? So the Maharil says there's a separate halacha of lighting in a synagogue. It's totally different from lighting in your house, because a synagogue is similar to the Beis HaMikdash. It's like a minor temple. So since the miracle happened in the temple, so there's a special halacha. He says that you fulfill the mitzvah in a shul, because a shul is similar to the Beit HaMikdash where it was lit. So what we're doing in our home, we're kind of saying our home is like a Beit HaMikdash. Our home is representing the original miracle, which was in the Beit HaMikdash. But a shul certainly does, because a shul is really a public space where we serve God. So since it's very similar to the original miracle, so there's a special mitzvah separate from a guest or anything else, but the shul lights kind of candles, and that's why in many shuls, they light Hanukkah candles in the morning, they make a bracha, in the night they make a bracha. Because why light in the morning? Because it's not dependent on whether it's dark outside. It's dependent on we're mimicking the miracle in the Beit HaMikdash, which was 24 hours, which was lit the whole time. So that's obviously for inside, because that's what the Beit HaMikdash is all about. So the shul is a separate halacha, which applies only to shul. So it's something that we should realize, that shul is a special place. It's a place that has its own category of lighting Hanukkah candles. Okay, we'll stop here. Anyway, if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to take them. Yeah. So the reason I like first is because to show that it's a shamash, and so you don't have to use it. The reason why it's there is because to show you that it's specifically not, shamash is supposed to be not part of the candle. That's why I light it first, because the bracha is supposed to go on the lighting of the candles. The shamash is only there to show that the mitzvah of lighting it. But the main candles are the candles you actually light. So that's the mitzvah. There's no mitzvah to light a shamash.
Where did the idea come from that you're supposed to use a shamash?
From Beit HaMikdash. Beit HaMikdash had another candle they lit with it.
I have a question going back to the lodging. Just like a differentiator of what actually it means when you sleep. So you said like owning a home is like better lighting earlier. But is there a difference between like if you're paying a mortgage versus like renting an apartment versus like renting a hotel room for a night? Like what is
all
the same?
Everyone's in all three cases you're considered an owner. The difference is that if you rent a house, if you own a house, buy a house, you got to put mezuzahs up right away because you own the house. You rent the house, so the Gemara says that 30 days is the time where you might go back on a rental. You don't go back on a buy, a purchase, but you go back on a rental. So then we, because maybe you don't like the place, you're not happy. So Chazal give you 30 days to because you're not considered an owner until after 30 days are there. But generally speaking, an owner of a house and a renter is considered an owner as well.
Okay.
30
days.
With regard to, two-part question, with regard to roommates who are unrelated, if they both rent or own the property, do they have to, does one have to put in money, or are they both considered like, are they considered like a household?
So the reason why a household works is the money is because basically a child and a wife are a part of the monetary ownership, have monetary ownership over the person's property. So if you light candles, you're basically lighting their candles. It's the same thing. But if you're roommates and you don't have that advantage, so basically each one of you have to light on their own.
What if you have like the classic sitcom problem of the roommates, and one of the roommates has like the bum boyfriend who basically lives there but doesn't actually pay rent? Is he like a guest in that situation?
So it's a good question. we'll see if there's not. There's no
thought experiment.
Yeah. There's not a. It's not a. If there's no legal bond between them, they're just.
Uh-huh.
So it's no different than roommates.
Okay.
So halakhically, when you get married, it's this legal monetary obligation to one another, and that pools for money.
Legal halachically, you're saying.
Halachically, okay. Yeah.
A lease between roommates wouldn't count.
Right. Okay. It seems that everyone has their own obligation if they're leased. Oh. Each one has their own money. Okay, great. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
I feel very passionately about the final stanza of Mao's Sur. I always sing it in the same feeling.
Are you getting used to your neighborhood? Are you enjoying
the
location?
Yeah, the location is good. I even have a hard time sometimes holding my composure, singing it.
Very, very, very emotional. Yeah. It's amazing. It goes through all those periods of exile.
Yeah.
And then
I don't sing all of them.
We made the song.
We made the song. But I always sing.
Well, give me one more day.
I would certainly urge everybody.
I know it's not like 30 hours, yeah. So I'm going to try and
it's great.
Find.
It's
I'll
beautiful.
Check with
it's the. Very, very moving.
Yeah, it's right around there.
Oh, okay.
To me, it means you're part of the song, and we're part of that song.
Oh yeah.
We're in the in living history.
But everything's working as far as your heat and
The new heater's fine. Every time, I'm harachamim is set on Shabbat.